This podcast is part of the Red 5 Network. For more Red 5 Network podcasts, visit red5network.com.
On this week's show, the Batman soars at the box office. We get some news on a Batman spinoff series, and we're going to review the Batman with our spoiler review. And I guess, holy crap, Batman, this show's all about Batman. Hello there, everybody. Welcome to episode 119 of our podcast.
Welcome, welcome.
Adam.
Josh.
You made me laugh a great deal before this podcast even began, so I hope we can carry that good humor into this episode. you brought back a real treat in the form of a gift featuring John Travolta.
Adele Dazeem.
Adele Dazeem. Oh, it's great. Great. Anyway, what have you been up to?
We are working on, I don't know if I said this on the podcast yet, but we're working on finishing up our basement, which will give me a little bit of a living space and an office space finally. So, not office space the movie, but an actual space for an office.
Speaking of comedy, Office Space, great funny movie.
Yeah, so I'll actually have a decent recording place here hopefully in a month or two. So but yeah, I've been working, helping with that this weekend, and you know, that's about it. How about you?
Cool. Actually, I just got done watching West Side Story with my wife. And
I watch that, but I'm kind of saving it for something. I don't know what yet.
Yeah, special rainy day. Oh wait, that was today.
Yes, it was.
So we kind of split it into two parts. We watched some of it last night and some of it tonight. I mean, it's pretty long. You know, I wouldn't say necessarily it's over long, but I did quite enjoy it. I didn't. The music from like the 50s isn't quite my style personally, but you know, so I didn't love the music, but I did really enjoy the story. I'd never seen the original or anything like that, but I enjoyed the story quite a lot. It was kind of a bummer, kind of a tragic type of thing. But I guess it kind of had to go that way based on what happens in this story. But I thought, and I'm going to call it right now, Adam, Oscars. This movie, I feel, needs to win in production design. I feel like it did a great job of really creating the feel of that time period, and not only having it be a movie, but it feels like it could be like these Broadway sets in a way that it's filmed too, in the way that they, you know. So I think I'm just going to call it right now, and I think that deserves it for production design. I don't even know what else was nominated, but I'm giving it to West Side Story. But
okay, you're calling it. Do we have to write that down somewhere?
No, you'll remember it. Plus, it's recorded.
All right. Yeah, it's true.
The internet forever, so on the interwebs.
Yeah, internet is forever.
Yeah. So diamonds that are was forever, kind of my... What's that? Diamonds are forever?
Yeah.
And they're a girl's best friend.
That's a Bond movie.
Yeah, you're right. Diamonds are forever. Hey, so I already gave a recommendation that is not my recommendation. So that was a way for me to sneak in two recommendations again.
Nice.
My real recommendation is, and I don't know if I've talked about it or not, but Cobra Kai season 4.
Okay.
I really, really enjoy this season. I think it's one of the best seasons so far. It really, the tension...
Okay.
Really amps up, and it's leading to this All Valley tournament towards the last two episodes of this season, and there's a lot of really good stuff with the training, with Cobra Kai and the villains and Miyagi-Do and Eagle Fang and Eagle Fang and Miyagi-Do trying to work together, but they can't quite get it right. You know, Johnny Lawrence and Daniel LaRusso have a hard time with that. So I don't want to spoil too much since you haven't watched it yet, but I thought it was great. You know, I thought the character development was strong. They always find a way to make me laugh and throw in that 80s nostalgia. So I think this is one of my favorite seasons yet.
Nice. Mine's pretty easy. Just go watch The Batman. And if you saw it once, maybe there watch it a second time.
To that point, I need to see it again. I mean, I once was definitely not enough for me.
Yeah, I can see that.
And I definitely need to see it again. So that brings us actually to our question to rule them all for this week.
One question to rule them all.
So last week's question was, before we saw Robert Pattinson in The Batman, who was your favorite Batman actor to this point? And we had Adam West, Michael Keaton, Christian Bale, and Ben Affleck. Christian Bale took this one with 48.8%. Coming in at a close second was Michael Keaton with 41.5%. And the other two were just pretty negligible. And as far as you and I were concerned, Christian Bale was our favorite. And so we nailed it. We got it right.
Yep.
But now we're in a post Robert Pattinson Batman world. So our poll question for this week, who is now your favorite Batman after seeing Robert Pattinson in The Batman? So I put our top two plus Robert Pattinson in there. So we have Michael Keaton, Christian Bale, and Robert Pattinson. So in not including like Bruce Wayne into this, because that could just become really convoluted and everything. Who is your favorite Batman? I mean, we could probably ask Bruce Wayne another day. So we have Michael Keaton, Christian Bale, and Robert Pattinson. Go.
I always factor Bruce into this when I answer it, so my answer includes a little bit of Bruce.
Oh, sorry.
But it's going to be Christian Bale, regardless.
Still Christian Bale. Okay. I think Christian Bale is my favorite Bruce Wayne, and Robert Pattinson is my favorite Batman after seeing this.
I can see that.
Enjoyed that.
Either way, for me, it didn't change, I don't think.
Mm-hmm. So we're going to ask you guys, what do you think? Has your mind changed about your favorite Bat actor, BAT actor? And we'll put that out on there. So make sure you vote. Let us know. And now it is time to head into our new segment.
Sold out? Every copy. Tomorrow morning, Spider-Man, page one with a decent picture this time. Move Conway to page seven.
There's a problem with page seven.
I make it page eight and give him 10% off. Okay. I make it 5%.
That can't be done.
Get out of here!
So, according to some estimates, The Batman actually exceeded some expectations, particularly here at the domestic box office. It made $128 million over the weekend, and that includes the preview showings that happened last week as well.
Yeah.
And then it added another $120 million internationally for a worldwide total of $248.5 million. And that is, you know, in the past couple of years, the biggest opening other than No Way Home. So it had a lot going against it, Adam, I think. I mean, first of all, this is a long movie and it's almost 3 hours long. That could, for one, deter people from seeing it in the theater. Plus, it just means there are less available showtimes for this movie because of its length. So you have to consider that. Consider the fact that this is a darker, nearly R-rated film that probably some people hesitated to bring their kids to, you know, and there's a lot of different Batman versions out there. So you put all those things into the mix, and I think this is quite the accomplishment.
Yeah, that's all. Those are all fair points.
Yeah, so I would really like to see this movie to continue to bring in the big bucks. I mean, it is very positively reviewed. Mm-hmm. I'm sure there'll be a lot of word of mouth. And, you know, this one is critically being reviewed well as the audience.
Yeah.
You know, the score is pretty high there. Uncharted came in at number two, pulling in another 3-day 11 million total. And it, domestically, it is just over 100 million after 3 weeks. And Spider-Man No Way Home is actually still in the top five. It came in at number four. It's almost at 800 million.
What is Sing 2 still doing on there?
I don't know. I mean, but it's still on there too. So
it's been out for a little while, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has been.
Thought so.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I mean, it's in like the dollar theater now and stuff.
Week 11, it says. It's wild.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's, I think, available for purchase now, but which is interesting.
These windows are all
anyhow. That, yeah. So that's our box office report for this week. And we're going to talk a little bit more about the Batman, though. So toward the end of the Batman, and we're going to get into spoiler territory here. So
we might as well just here from here on out.
You might as well. Yeah. This whole show is going to be a spoiler.
If you haven't seen the Batman yet, and you care, maybe come back after you've seen the Batman. Pause and come back, because from here on out, there are no guarantees.
For sure. So toward the end of the Batman, Paul Dano's Riddler, locked up now in Arkham Asylum, comes face to face with another inmate played by Barry. Is that Keegan?
I believe it's Keegan. Yeah.
And he was actually in The Eternals, I believe.
Yes.
I forget what the character was that he played. But he was kind of,
didn't care enough.
He was kind of the always like irritated character that was just always angry. And
he's the guy
that one.
Yeah. The one that ended up being the recluse.
Yeah.
Druig.
So his character, what's that?
Druig.
Yeah. That one. Mm-hmm. So
he's had a lot of good roles. He was in Dunkirk also. I mean, he's done a lot of good stuff.
I think he's a good choice. I just, I don't know how and we'll talk about this later. Yeah. I don't know how I felt about the inclusion of the Joker here. And here's what director Matt Reeves had to say. I thought it'd be really neat if so much of the fabric of Gotham just already existed. He told this to Variety, and it was like an old Warner Brothers gangster movie. And if you took a certain turn, you might see a character in it, in his origins. But he says it's not an Easter egg scene. It's not one of those end credit Marvel or DC scenes that's leading to the next movie. In fact, he says, I have no idea when or if we would return to that character in the movies. The idea was more to say, hey, look, if you think that trouble is going away in Gotham, you can forget it. It's already here and it's already delicious. So just this idea of all these villains are kind of already or in and around Gotham in either their infancy or, you know, starting to develop as villains, basically. I like this.
My rebuttal to that is, why cast Barry Keegan and bring him to the premiere?
Yeah, I mean, that's a really good question.
I feel like there's more there in terms of planning, and I think that's just kind of a suave way to dance around it for now. So, I definitely think that Barry Keegan's coming back into this series at some point, and I think that they have an idea of when that will happen, and I think it's just trying to stay mum right now. Is that definitely the next movie, you know, to his point? Maybe not. You know, maybe it builds. Mm-hmm. So, you know, maybe that's kind of like a finale type thing. But I definitely think that there's more to it than, you know, him just saying, you know, when or if we return to it, you're going to return to it. So.
Right, right. And speaking of that, I mean, we might have an answer here for you in our next article, which is also related to the Batman, but it's focused on the spinoff series. And it was originally supposed to be a Gotham, one of this series, the mm-hmm. not the Penguin one, right. But the other one. It was supposed to be a Gotham PD series, but there's been some updates to that. And he says that it has now evolved into a different drama and will instead center around the world of Arkham. And he teased a horror vibe of this spinoff. and he says the GCDP thing.
That should be GCPD
thing.
Come on, coming soon.
Come on. That story has kind of evolved, he's revealed. We've actually now moved more into the realm of exactly what would happen in the world of Arkham as it relates coming off of our movie and some of the characters. It's like a horror movie or a haunted house that is Arkham. The idea, again, the way that Gotham is a character in the movie, I really want Arkham to exist as a character.
Now I want an Arkham walk through a haunted house.
Yes. So now that we're talking about this
Arkham
spinoff series, is this where we could see that Joker character show up for the next? You know what I mean?
Yeah, maybe.
So I think that maybe that's why we have that casting and everything. And
Could be.
Yeah.
I can see that.
Whether or not. And actually, let's just save that for later. Let's talk more about the Joker later on.
Okay. Sounds good to me.
For now, we're going to leave Batman and jump over to Disney Plus, which has officially announced plans of launching an ad-supported subscription plan, along with an international rollout in 2023. So it's going to be an ad-supported plan. Their aim is to provide greater accessibility to a broader audience and give consumers more choice and control. So it's going to be at a lower price. We're not sure what the price is.
Yeah, don't know much about it. Don't know. I mean, we have a U.S. date for late this year. I would imagine probably around the time of when subscriptions, those 3-year subscriptions that they offered at the beginning of this, I would imagine around that time when those start to expire, which is me.
That makes sense.
So I would imagine around then, and then an international rollout next year.
Yeah.
Probably around the time that it came out in Britain and stuff.
Yeah. So what? Disney Plus, when did it come out? 2019?
So whatever day the Mandalorian premiered, it was November something, I believe.
Okay. So do you think this means we're going to get a price raise?
There's speculation. I mean,
for regular
November 12th, 2019
subscribers. Yeah.
Maybe. It's hard to say. I will say this, Disney Plus is pretty cheap for what it offers, I believe.
I was going to say, like, who is this for? And I mean, what is it, like, $7, $8 a
month? I think it's $7.99 now, if I'm not... I think it launched at $6.99, I think it's $7.99 now.
So, I'm wondering, like, are they going to have two price points now? And, regular Disney Plus is going to be, like... $12 and this one's going to be like $7 or something,
I don't know if it would go up that much in one jump.
I hope not.
But even if it did, I mean, I think I'd be okay with that. It's my main driver streaming service right now, to be honest.
When I first saw this, I was like, who is this for? Like, it's already cheap. I was like, I'm surprised. That
yeah. Gonna, but I mean, they kind of win both ways on this. You know, I think they can get, if the price is actually lower than it is right now, let's say it is like $5.99, $6.99, somewhere in that range. Mm-hmm. Then you probably get a couple people, more than a couple, that were kind of hesitant because, you know, it was $8 or $9 a month or whatever. But maybe they'll do like $5, $6, $7 a month. You get that, plus you get the ad revenue on top of that from them as well. So, I mean, more consumers can win with this if the price is lower. I've seen some people speculating that, you know, that this ad supported plan would take the price point that's out there now and the other one would go up. And, you know, the one that... You know, the main plan that we have right now would go up.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's that because they do specifically say a lower price point. So you would think that it wouldn't be the same price as it is today.
Sure.
So I think at that point, you know, consumers would win because they're getting an option. You know, if they don't mind ads, they can go cheaper. Or if they didn't get it because of the price, maybe they will get an ad supported plan. And then, you know, Disney wins because... You know, while they're getting less money off the subscription, they're getting more money from the ads. So It's kind of a win-win, I think. It's a good move, in my opinion.
That's a good point, for sure. Yeah, I mean, I would like to see it maybe be looking at like $5.99 for ad-supported, and then maybe like $9.99 for for everybody else. Hopefully it doesn't go above that. But yeah, this is interesting. So we'll see what happens. You know, their target, their goal is to get to 230, in between 230 and 260 million subscribers by 2024. So I'm sure this is a strategy to try to get there too.
Yeah, do we know where they're at right now? We probably do.
I don't know, but okay. I'm sure it's somewhere. If you want me to continue talking about Disney Plus while you look at that.
According to TechCrunch last month, they're saying Disney has 42.9 million subscribers in the U.S. and Canada and 41 internationally. So it also has 45.9 million Disney Plus Hotstar subscribers. So if they're counting all of that, then you're looking like 170. So they're adding like...
Okay.
They're adding like another 70 to 90 if that's including the Hotstar. So.
Right. And speaking of Disney Plus, we have some Netflix Marvel shows coming to Disney Plus. And looking for a date here. They're let's see.
March
March 16th.
Okay.
March 16th. So we're going to get Daredevil, Jessica Jones, Luke Cage, Iron Fist, The Defenders, The Punisher, and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Which is not Netflix.
Right.
That was ABC.
And coming along with that, subscribers will be prompted to update their parental controls to make sure these shows are suitable for the accounts that are watching them.
Yeah, because this is really, in the U.S., this is the first mature-rated stuff that's on Disney+. Plus.
Yeah, so
which is,
any thoughts on that, Adam? Do you have any issues with this? Yeah,
I
don't love
that. A little bit, yeah. I would have rather, and I know that this conversation is different internationally, but because we're in the U.S., I kind of like having the option of Hulu to just not have anything mature rated on Disney Plus. I kind of like, not even just because I'm a parent, you know, and I have a kid to think about, because I do use their parental controls already. I don't, you know, my daughter for my daughter, I don't have her on the kid thing, you know, the kid profile. I have her on a full-fledged adult profile with a content rating on it because on the kid profile, she can't watch certain things. Like, it just disappears, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, things like that they have deemed troublesome, you know, like Pinocchio or any of that, so you just can't get it on the kid profile. So to save the issues of that, I just gave her an adult profile and I filtered out, you know, PG-13 stuff.
Certain thing, yeah.
So I'm already doing this, basically. I just have to filter out mature now for her. But even for me, I like just having a streaming service where I didn't have to worry about anything. I don't watch much mature-rated TV anyway. So I liked having a streaming service that was just whatever I watched, I knew that it wasn't going to have any of the gratuitous sex, violence, you know, any of that stuff, gore. And so while I do like these, I really kind of wish that they would have went to Hulu and they would have kept that division of content. But, I know that's also not the best model for them, I guess, you know, and to be honest,
if they want to keep all their Marvel content housed in the same place.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, kind of, but then also having two different subscription services for different types of content. I know that's not the greatest thing for them. They can probably drive more subscriptions having it housed under one roof. But I also don't really know what the point of Hulu is anymore.
Right.
So maybe we're starting to see the end of Hulu.
Yeah, and I mean, and just watching like West Side Story, I mean, and there's definitely some content that is for adults only in that movie, you know what I mean? There's definitely some language and some violence and stuff like that.
Well, you saw, and you kind of saw something that with Hamilton too, where they had edited versions of Hamilton, you know?
So you do wonder what the function of Hulu is going to be if it's not to house the more mature content.
And Hulu's not really an international thing anyway, so I mean... You know, maybe it's just the writing has probably been on the wall, and you know, maybe this is just the beginning of the actual end for Hulu. Mm-hmm. So
could be. We shall see. I'm excited to go back and rewatch Daredevil. I will say that it's been a while since I've watched that. And now that Charlie Cox is back in the MCU and also Kingpin and everything, you know, I think I might have to go back and watch that.
Yeah, I was actually really excited to watch Daredevil again too, and I was going to do it until I found out that it was leaving Netflix. And I figured I was going to be watching on Hulu, but you know, now I'll just be watching on Disney Plus. So
Disney Plus,
it is what it is.
Yep. I guess we just got to make sure we're
not going to boycott or anything.
Yeah, that's. I didn't think you would, you know.
Yeah. I'm not going to start any hashtags.
Speaking of a series that I really enjoy, Game of Thrones is now available in 4K on the Vudu service. This is the first time, and the first service that's actually offering the entire series in 4K. And
not even right HBO now Max. For a
it's not in 4K on HBO Max. It's in HD.
Interesting.
Yeah. So I have season 8 in 4K, but I don't have any of the other seasons in 4K. So this is tempting because I believe currently the price for each season is $25 for 4K. But if you get all 8 seasons, you get it for $99.99, so $100. Now, I don't have that $100 right now. That
sounds like a TV get that. That sounds like an infomercial. But wait.
But wait.
Buy them all right now, and it's $99.99.
But if I had an extra $100 right now, which I don't because I just had to upgrade my iPhone, so I'm getting a new iPhone, so I can't buy anything for a while. Because I milked my iPhone 8 for as long as I could. But yeah, if I had the extra $100 around, I'd get this. I would like to go back and watch the series in 4K. I mean, it's beautifully shot. It's you know, it's just a beautifully filmed series. So if anybody out there is interested in owning this in 4K, it's available for $99.99 or $25 each per season. Also, I believe if you already purchased the series in HD or any of the seasons in HD, you can get an upgrade for I think $5 per season or $30 for the entire series. Yeah.
Do you have that?
No, I have them all on Blu-ray.
Oh, they won't take that?
I don't think so. That's BS. I think you had to actually purchase them all digitally through Vudu.
Boo.
Yeah. But that wraps it up for the news this week. And are you ready for a spoiler review of the Batman?
Yes. That's my Christian Bale. Yes.
I loved it. All right, so we have seen the Batman, we talked about the box office, we talked about its critical success, and now we're going to give our spoiler thoughts on this movie. It was almost a week ago when we saw this, Adam, believe it or not.
Yeah, about that.
So what were your overall thoughts, you know, coming out of the theater, your initial thoughts, or, you know, any overall thoughts you have about this film?
It's a great movie. It's not my favorite Batman. And I said on Discord when I got out, I loved like 90% of that. And I think that's kind of where I'm at still. So,
Yeah. For me, my overall thoughts were that I really loved it. I was, you know, in the first 10 minutes of that film, in the way the tone was set up, the way the film was just, you know, just the beginning, I was like, oh my goodness, this might be my favorite movie of all time. I was just really into it. And by the end, it didn't prove to be my favorite movie of all time, but it is definitely one of my favorite Batman movies. It might be right at or even above The Dark Knight for me. And so it's right up there. And I thought there were a couple places where pacing was an issue and where it felt like the runtime was a little too long. But other than that, you know, I really, really, really love this film.
Yeah.
So
I can see
I'm,
that.
I'm excited to
But what you said about the opening there, I want to talk about that real quick, because that opening, there's a couple spots throughout this film with the narration, with Robert Pattinson narrating.
Yes.
And particularly that opening narration was really poignant, and it really felt like someone was reading a graphic novel to me.
Yes.
The way it was written.
I loved that.
The dialogue, the way it was written, the scenes that it was over top of, it just felt like there were words on a page that someone was narrating to me.
Absolutely.
So,
and it reminded me of reading Year One.
Yeah, absolutely. You know? Absolutely.
And so I was glad I read that before
it
I saw
actually,
this.
Yeah, it actually made me want more narration through the film, you know, and it kind of goes away from that and then comes back, you know, once in a while, especially towards the end.
Yeah.
But I loved
it. Yeah, I kind of wish there was more throughout of that. Yeah. And you even mentioned, I think, after that this film is almost, it felt like a graphic novel jumping off of the page, you know.
I've never had that particular feeling in a Batman movie.
Yeah.
You know, some of the Tim Burton and Tim Burton produced ones kind of had that comic-y vibe, but it was more the campy comic-y vibe. This one really just felt like a graphic novel just coming to life. So,
in a way, this film might be more faithful to source material or the Batman comics or than maybe anything else. You know,
here and there.
I'm not totally, you know, I'm not a
I don't
comic
think it's,
book reader.
Yeah, I wouldn't say it's totally. I mean, it's definitely an adaptation. It's definitely an interpretation, and that's cool. I love it.
Yeah, so. I think it's closer to like a comic book film, though. Than,
absolutely. And you know
what I mean.
And Reeves has talked about you know the inspirations that they drew from this, you know, from specific Batman stuff, like you said, Year One, Long Halloween was definitely a part of that too.
I actually started watching the Long Halloween on HBO Max as well.
Yeah, they're pretty good. It's a really good graphic novel too. If you want to, rent it or pick it up. I think I might have a copy of it.
Okay. Yeah, so. I would love that. And you know, because I saw that you know it's Halloween. Like this movie opens
on Halloween.
On Halloween.
Yeah, I like that.
Which is really cool and everything. And you know, so there was just, I could talk over and over about this, but let's get into some of the characters and the performances. So we had Robert Pattinson as Batman and Bruce Wayne. Again, for me, I really loved his iteration of Batman here. I think it's a very brutal Batman, very hands-on, very hand-to-hand type combat, and like most Batman iterations are, but this feels more brutal, and we saw that in the trailers, and I think that comes through in the movie too. And I love how everything is sort of handmade, you know. You could tell that he's like crafting this stuff, you know what I mean, and it has that quality to it. And I like that his Batman voice was more of a harsh whisper than maybe like a, you know, he didn't really, and he didn't need to talk a lot. He did when it mattered.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, sure. Like you mentioned that he was brutal, and when he does fight, he is brutal. But there's a lot of not fighting in this movie, you know, which I dig that about it. I mean, he fights when he has to, and you know, he is forceful when he has to be, but he's also spending a lot of time following clues, and this is a mystery, and I particularly like that about this movie.
Yeah, I love that aspect of it, for sure. And we're going to talk more about that when we talk about the plot and the story and everything. I loved Detective Batman in this movie. I thought that was great. Then we had Zoe Kravitz as Catwoman and Selina Kyle. What were your thoughts on her?
Yeah, she's incredible start to finish. I still really love Michelle Pfeiffer's take on Catwoman, but I mean, this is every bit as interesting to me. And you know, honestly, with a rewatch, maybe two, I think it'll be at least right up there with my favorite Catwoman. So,
yeah, she was great. I mean, yeah. I you know In the non-spoiler review I did, I said I couldn't take my eyes off of her, and not just because she's pretty attractive, but she just draws your attention. She's got this prowess about her, this confidence, and she really can take care of herself. But I also like the dynamic between her and Batman as well, and their chemistry was really good.
I will say, if there's one thing I could change about this movie above anything else, I didn't love her ski mask. I think the rest of her outfit was so cool. You know, they had that, you know, leather feel. It just felt Catwoman, and then you had the ski mask.
Yeah.
So that bugged me a little bit.
I can see that.
Especially because I saw a promo image from something, a magazine, I forget which one it was, that had Pattinson and her, and she's in like a more leathery type Catwoman mask, and that looks so much better.
I think I know what you're talking about.
I mean it's a great image, so whatever that came out of whatever magazine that was from, you know, it was really great stuff, but I just ended up liking that better, and I wish that was actually part of the film. But
yeah, that's understandable. Then we had Jeffrey Wright as Jim Gordon, and again, I thought he was solid. I thought I really enjoyed it.
I would even give him more than solid. I thought he was an excellent Jim Gordon. I love Jeffrey Wright in just about anything, but I think he was an excellent Jim Gordon, possibly the best.
Yeah, I can see that argument, certainly. And he was just... The way he and Batman interacted and their kind of that duo, and both being kind of detectives on the case, I really enjoyed their interactions.
Their chemistry was great together. I think it really worked well.
Yep,
actually one of the best comedy lines. Yeah, you know, the whole "you could have pulled the punch" and Batman saying "I did."
I did. Yeah, that was a good moment.
You know, I think the comedy in this movie is actually really good. It's not Marvel comedy. It doesn't hit you in the face.
No.
But there's a lot of times that it's actually very, very funny, and it's more of a dry humor, but it's there and it's good. So.
Yeah, which is my kind of humor actually usually. And speaking of that, I thought Colin Farrell in his nearly pretty much unrecognizable,
you wouldn't know him from appearance or voice.
I loved, this was a standout to me, the Penguin slash Oz, that was a standout performance to me. I really love this iteration of the Penguin. This is, I was hoping to see this kind of Penguin in Christopher Nolan's trilogy. I was hoping he would show up in like the third one, but that never happened. So I'm glad we got it here, kind of having this mob crime boss type, you know, Penguin in there. And he, obviously he's going, it appears that he will be succeeding Carmine Falcone's role and everything, you know.
I was going to say this, and I thought it was going to be more of a hot take, but since you already said it, it's not. but I think Colin Farrell was, I think Penguin was actually my favorite part of this movie. And it made me that much more excited for the Penguin series. But I really think that Colin Farrell was the most fun character to watch in this movie. You know, just...
I think he was having a ton of fun, too.
Seemed that way. You know,
and I think when you're... Sometimes when you're hidden behind a mask of sorts...
Yeah, right.
It sometimes can bring out the best.
He said something to that effect, and I don't know. That he thought that the makeup would be, you know, really restricting on him, but he said it was actually kind of the opposite. You know?
It was freeing, yeah.
Yeah.
And that showed. And then I thought Paul Dano's Riddler was very creepy, very scary, whether he had the mask on or he didn't have the mask on. I actually preferred him.
I find that I preferred him without the mask. I thought that the ending of the movie without the mask, where you could see the crazy in his face and the passion, I thought that was actually more chilling than the mask. And I kind of wish that was done more, you know?
That whole scene, like the interrogation type scene when he's in the cell and Batman comes and they have their conversation, that was a chilling kind of scene, you know?
Right.
So I thought that now, was...
I will say, the one thing about the Paul Dano's Riddler for me is it does feel kind of reminiscent of Heath Ledger's Joker, you know?
A little bit, yeah.
It feels kind of that way. He's doing the things with the videos to gain mm-hmm. public support, which he does. You know, you have the interrogation scenes. You have a lot of the similar beats there. Mm-hmm. So it does kind of feel like kind of maybe retreading some stuff that's been done before. But that doesn't take away from any of it, you know?
Yeah.
So I want to be clear about that.
Yeah, that's a good point, though.
It's still really, really, really well done. It just has, mm-hmm. for me, it just has that feel of something I've seen before. So
I can see that, too. And then we had, I'm not entirely positive. I'm going to try to say his name correctly, but John Turturro. Carmine Falcone. Yeah, he's been in a few things.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
oh, yeah.
Quite a few things that I've really enjoyed. Mm-hmm. What comes to my mind is he was in Transformers.
Mr. Deeds comes to my mind.
Mr. Deeds.
He was also, have you ever seen Secret Window? It's a Johnny Depp film.
No.
Stephen King. It's a pretty good, he's in that.
I really enjoyed him in The Night Of, an HBO series, which is kind of along similar lines. But and right now he's actually in the Apple TV series Severance, which I'll probably talk about in the coming weeks. And so I didn't know, you know, can this guy be in a serious role? But yeah, obviously.
Oh, yeah, he can.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And I thought he was great here as Carmine Falcone.
Yeah, check out Secret Window. He has some, it's a very serious, creepy role for him in that movie.
Nice.
But it's also a really good psychological thriller, which you might like.
Oh, I love those. So. And then we had Andy Serkis as Alfred, and the only thing I want to say about this is we didn't get to see enough of him, unfortunately.
I agree.
but I enjoyed him in the role. So what were your thoughts on the plot and story? I mean, because we have really a film noir / serial killer mystery. I've seen comparisons to Seven, which I really enjoyed, and The Zodiac, which I also enjoyed. The Zodiac is a slow burn. You know, it's a slow, they're going after this killer for a long time. it's kind of, you know, similar to the Batman in that way. And we have a running time here that's near 3 hours. So I don't know, what were your thoughts on this?
I liked the story. I really loved the film noir aspects of it. And it's right off the bat from the title card on, it's film noir. You know, right down to even the end credits felt noir too. So, I mean, the whole thing is noir. Which I really dug. I dug the mystery aspect of it. I liked that, you know, you didn't have, you knew your villain, but you didn't quite know what was going on around it.
Who was really pulling the strings behind everything.
Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm.
I really liked that part of it. You know, since you have runtime here, I'll say I do feel that it was about 15 minutes too long.
And I don't remember what point it was in the film, but there was some point in the film where I started feeling that runtime.
I did too.
I was like, this is going on. The pacing here is a little much. But
so where I never actually felt that for things like Bond or Endgame, I did. I did feel it here. And I think a 3-hour Batman movie is fine, but I just, for this particular one, I think it could have been 15 minutes shorter.
Yeah, and I don't know exactly what I would take out of it, but it did feel like a little too long.
You know, I think I started to feel it most around the time with the flood and the vans. You know, as soon as I heard vans, I was like, wait, are we doing Dark Knight Rises again?
And then
right about then, I think I started to feel that. So.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying you had to take the whole thing with the vans out and the flooding out and, you know, that type of thing, but I definitely felt it there.
Yeah. Yeah. And so there have definitely been some maybe minor complaints about the third act. And, you know, because when we got to the point where Carmine Falcone is revealed and caught and everything, and killed. I believe, right? Okay. Yeah, just making sure my memory sometimes isn't good.
Yeah. There was no pulse.
I thought, and you know, he's in the Paul Dano's Riddler's in the diner. And I'm like, okay, they're going to get him. I'm like, okay, this feels like this could be the end of the movie, but then it goes on after that. Like, it's not over yet because he has more in store for Batman. So, yeah. But there was action in that third act towards the end that kept me, you know, in it. But yeah. Anyway, running time, you know, can be a good thing or not. The score I thought was excellent. And I even really enjoyed, I don't know how you feel about it, but the inclusion of that Nirvana song.
yeah, they leaned on it a little heavy.
I was okay with it because I thought it felt like it really fit into this movie.
It was there twice, right?
Yeah.
I think I liked it the first time, and the second time I was, you know, I don't think we have to revisit it.
That's fair.
Yeah.
But yeah, I thought Michael Giacchino's score here was excellent. I thought it was haunting. I thought it was, it came to life, you know, in this Gotham came to life. This Gotham was a character in itself. And I thought the score really captured that for me.
Yeah, I think the score was great. I think it's probably one of Michael Giacchino's best works to date. So, particularly the theme, you know, the main theme, I think that's probably the most memorable out of the whole thing for me, obviously.
Yeah. And the Batman's main theme, it is very prominent throughout the whole score. Like every time you see Batman show up, basically, you hear pieces of that score, you know, of his theme and everything, which I thought was cool because like when that character is on, you're hearing that similar music, you know? So let's talk about some of our maybe favorite aspects or moments. In the beginning of the film, the first time we see Batman and he comes out of the darkness, I thought that was like such a cool entrance. And just that first kind of brutal fight that takes place there really set the tone for the film. And I just loved that moment. And to go along with that, I really enjoyed all the fight scenes. I thought they were very well done, very well choreographed, and they felt really, really brutal, which I think is appropriate for Batman. So I enjoyed all of those things.
Yeah, one thing I enjoyed, and it's kind of weird because it's also something I didn't enjoy, but I'll explain that in a little bit. I enjoyed the reason why we didn't get much Bruce in this.
Yes.
You know, and there's been a lot of talk about that. You don't really get the Bruce character that we're used to, you know. But then you find out later, you find out, especially in that, you know, kind of narration at the end, this is Bruce kind of finding himself again in this movie.
Yeah, this is year two.
Yeah, and he's at this point really kind of lost in that Batman persona. And it's really kind of taken over his life at this point.
And he's all out for vengeance at this point in his character's journey, you know?
Yeah, there's some anger there. You know, it's rough around the edges. You know, but then he grows more towards the end of this. And he kind of maybe realizes more what he needs to be. I enjoyed that particular aspect of why there's not much Bruce. However, don't love the Bruce that we did get, and I'll talk about that more later.
Yeah, I mean, I think this Bruce was very damaged. You know,
he's still dealing with a lot of stuff. Yeah,
yeah, he's still dealing with his parents' death and everything. So he's very damaged from that. You know, we're probably seeing a more damaged Bruce Wayne than ever before. And that definitely plays a role in his decisions and his choices throughout the movie. I mentioned before, I love the detective Batman / Gordon duo. I love that whole aspect of it. I mentioned also the Penguin. Love that. And one of my standout scenes was definitely the appearance of the Batmobile and that car chase in the rain. I mean, it could be a little bit hard to...
Great.
That, I love that Batmobile.
Yeah.
And I thought that was like the standout action scene for me, even though some of it was kind of hard to follow and chaotic. Like, I think that was obviously intentional. I mean, it was this car chase through the rain and everything.
So much rain in this movie.
But there was a lot of rain. But yeah, I that was one of my favorite moments. Probably.
Yeah, yeah, I can. And I'm gonna say Penguin again because Penguin was, you know, like I said before, one of my favorite parts of this movie. And I really ended up liking, and I hope that there's a reason for this. The idea of people pulling strings, you know, behind the curtains in Gotham, because I really hope, you know, you have sequels here on the end, but I'll talk about this now. I hope that that means in some sequels that we might get a story point called the Court of Owls. And if you're not familiar with that, it is kind of that, you know, kind of Illuminati style group, you know, behind the scenes in Gotham. And that was a storyline that came around in the New 52 when DC kind of rebooted their comics. But that was a really fun storyline, and I hope that they visit that. And I feel like that storyline in this is kind of setting it up. I really enjoyed that part of it, and I hope that that pays off with Court of Owls later. Yeah. So,
yeah, I'm not familiar, but it sounds cool.
Yeah, it is.
Any other favorite moments or aspects? Anything before we move on to negatives?
Yeah, we talked a little bit about Andy Serkis, but I think that his Alfred was stellar. You know, you see how much he cares, you know, for Bruce in this, and then you see how much, you know, Bruce still cares for Alfred. You kind of see that melding of the two, you know, where maybe the relationship's a little bit rocky, especially on Bruce's part. But then you see that really meld together with, you know, when he gets hurt and is in the hospital, and that scene in the hospital was really well done.
Thank you for mentioning that. That scene in the hospital was probably one of my favorite scenes in the film, it really, I think, led Bruce in a different direction. And
yeah, it really changed at that point. Mm-hmm. You know, he's
kind of changed his trajectory.
Yeah, I mean, there's some anger. We mentioned before, there's anger that's simmering there, and it's just about boiling over at that point. And then you know, Alfred kind of sheds more light on the backstory with his parents, and I think that really changes his outlook and approach on through the rest of the film.
Right. Yeah, and Bruce kind of discovering that you know, his father wasn't without flaw, that he was willing to go to a certain length to.
And to be honest, you know, I didn't love. For a while, I didn't love what they were doing with Thomas Wayne. You know, it kind of felt like they were making him into a bad guy. Yeah, and I didn't love that. You know, that I feel like Thomas, like the parents for Bruce, have to be that thing that he strives to, you know, that he strives to emulate, or, you know, wants to make them proud, or do right by them. And I felt like when you were making Thomas this kind of shady character, that it kind of destroyed that motivation. But, you know, that whole thing with Alfred really went a long way to bring that full circle for me, you know, even sitting in the theater to see what's going on here. You know, this is, you know, Thomas Wayne is still this really good person. He's trying to do right things, and he's desperate, you know?
Yes.
And
he never thought that somebody would have gotten killed because of
and
it.
And he didn't, you know, mean for that, you know, but he went to the wrong person, so.
Yeah. Yeah, so that was good stuff in that scene. Yeah, Alfred, I hope, you know, I thought he was dead when I saw it happen.
I did too. I did too. I'm glad they didn't leave that sitting too long, because that was rough.
But transitioning into the negatives, I guess I'll say one negative, and I don't know, there's certain things that I allow in terms of my suspending disbelief, but for some reason there's certain things that bother me, and nobody was really affected permanently by like getting blown up. So I mean, you know, you have Alfred who's in the presence of like a,
I can see
they
that.
Said it was like C4 explosion.
Yeah.
And you know, he has a few scratches.
Yeah.
And, I mean, he's in the hospital. Okay. But
there's a little bit of it of, you know, logic things with this movie. That's,
yeah.
That can be one of them. Another one of them is, you know, Batman escapes prison, and then the next scene with him and the police officers, they just kind of forget about it.
Yeah, they're just like
everything's okay. He's kind of annoying, good. You know, I wish he wasn't here, but,
yeah,
you know,
but he's
we're not going to worry about him just running out of the, you know, punching Gordon and just leaving.
So. Yeah, that's a good point. And I think at even one point, like, Batman gets blown up by something and he's fine too. So just some of those
he gets really shot minor... he gets shot in the chest with a shotgun.
Yeah,
but then
yeah.
He like does the adrenaline,
he injects himself with something. Yeah. So just saw a couple of those nitpicks for me, because there's not a lot I don't like about this movie.
Yeah, no, it's fair though.
I mentioned already like the pacing in some parts where I felt I gotta go back and watch it again to figure out when that moment was. It was actually before Act 3 for me.
Okay.
And then I don't know how I feel about the inclusion of the Joker. And there was something that felt off about it to me. Either the way he looked, you couldn't really see him, but the glimpse that I got looked weird. And the way he sounded, I was like, eh. And just Heath Ledger's Joker for me is the ultimate Joker. And I'm always kind of uncertain about touching Joker again. You know, I know you have to, but
do you?
It's like they're doing it in like every iteration. No, I just want to break.
Yeah, that's Joker. Exactly what I'm what I was gonna say about it.
Yeah,
you know, and like I said to you earlier in the week, like, I'm sure for Matt Reeves it has to be impossible to get your hands on this franchise and not do anything with Joker.
Anything with,
you know, Joker is like the best villain, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Across any medium, you know.
Yeah,
Joker is an insanely popular, insanely interesting villain to examine, and so, you know, it's kind of hard to fault, you know, bringing that character in at all.
Yeah.
However, we've gotten so much Joker over the last 10 to 12 years. You know, you go back and you think about stuff like, you know, the Arkham games with Mark Hamill doing an amazing Joker in those.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you mentioned Heath Ledger. You know, we have, I'm blanking on the guy's name, but Gotham.
Jared Leto.
Jared Leto also, but then Gotham, the TV show on Fox.
Yeah, there was that one.
Pretty incredible interpretation.
I liked that one a lot. Yeah. And that was actually the dude who plays Cal Kestis.
Absolutely.
In
yep.
Fallen Order.
Yep. Yeah. So, I mean, you have all these. Really, I mean, with the exception of Jared Leto, for me, really interesting takes on the Joker over the last 10 to 12 years. And that's not even counting anything animated
Joaquin,
that they've done.
And Joaquin Phoenix.
Phoenix is the other one, yeah.
I think it would have been cool if they would have included that Joker in this movie, even though it's, you know, not exactly connected.
But. Yeah. But you've just done so much with Joker. And
it's kind of oversaturation.
And you know, while I love the character, I wish now was the time for a break and to look at some other things in the Batman world, because Batman has so many great villains. So many of them don't really get screen time on these projects. Riddler hasn't had a lot of screen time, so I'm really glad they did that. Penguin hasn't either. You know, you gotta go back to really Batman Returns for much Batman live Returns, action, except for Gotham. You know, live action Penguin stuff. So I was glad for that. Then they start talking about, you know, Matt Reeves talks about Mr. Freeze, Pattinson talks about Court of Owls. There's so much that you can do with Batman that it isn't Joker, and you've done so much Joker. I was honestly deflated when I heard that mention of the clown in Arkham and all this other stuff. I was honestly like,
I was like, it felt like, the end of Batman Begins all over again.
A little bit, yeah. So I'm with you on that. You know, I think that I wish that it was something else, but I mean, we'll see what happens. You know, Matt Reeves says, mm-hmm. you know, if or when, so we'll see. I don't know.
Yeah.
And that doesn't mean, you know, it doesn't mean that the next movie is Joker. So.
Right. It could, it could be, he might be included in that spinoff series about Arkham, where maybe he'll play a central role in that, but maybe not be featured in one of the films.
Yeah. Could be.
We'll see.
Could be.
Did you have any other negatives?
Yeah, I mean, I've already talked about runtime. There's a few. Like, I don't want to get nitpicky with this because it's a really great movie, and you know, it's up there on my list of Batman movies. It's not perfect for me. It's not my favorite, but I do really, really like it. So, I mean, yeah, there's some other negatives here and there, but I mean, I think I've covered the main ones at this point. Yeah. So
what would you give this film? For your rating, for your score out of 10?
With one viewing, I'm going to give you a range because I'm not quite sure, I guess, but it's like an 8.5 to a 9.
Okay.
8.5 on a bad day, 9 on a good day. So yeah. It's in there, you know?
Mm-hmm. Nice. Mine would be 9.5. Aside from, for me, like the minor things in the runtime, mm-hmm. and the pacing, it's nearly a perfect movie for me. So I had to go 9.5 on this one, and I'll see what I think about it the second time. Usually I even enjoy movies more the second time. So I don't think it's going to go up from a 9.5, but I'm not sure that it'll go down either.
Yeah, yeah, that's fair.
But any final thoughts we want to give, or thoughts about sequels? I did want to mention, just at the end of this film, Batman kind of goes from vengeance to hope.
Yeah.
Which I think is his character arc, you know, and going from this idea of vengeance in the beginning to, I really need to give the people of Gotham hope. And that's what Batman's needs to be next. So I think even though this is a very grim, dark take on the Dark Knight, it ends in a hopeful place.
Agreed. I actually just remembered one thing I was going to mention for a negative that I alluded to mm-hmm. earlier, but it was about the Bruce Wayne stuff. And it's not so much that we didn't get the you know, the rich playboy type Bruce Wayne, because I see what they're doing there. I just don't really love emo Bruce Wayne, I guess. And yeah. This is very emo. So I feel like if you dig the emo stuff, you're going to love it. I don't. And so I didn't.
Yeah, I think I kind of dug it, okay, to be
that's
honest.
Fair. That's fair.
And just coming from like a perspective of
he's his young and his
character being
this.
Very damaged, you know?
Okay, right.
So I kind of bought into that and, but I also see room for this Bruce Wayne to grow,
yeah,
and to change.
So that's where that's where I'm kind of reserving this as well. Like I think there's room for that character to grow, for this mm-hmm. to be a little bit different down the road. So, and I would really dig if like Tenet Bruce Patton, Robert Pattinson. If Tenet Robert Pattinson kind of became what we end up getting with Bruce in this series, I would really kind of dig that.
That'd be cool. And maybe they even saw, I don't know when things were filmed and everything. But
actually,
I don't know if you
saw it, but Matt Reeves said he was quote unquote devastated that Pattinson did Tenet because he thought that that meant that he wouldn't be doing Batman. So.
Oh, okay. Okay, because, you know, I think you bring up a good point there, though, that that could be the type of Bruce Wayne we get eventually, which would be cool.
I would dig that, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Any other final thoughts or thoughts about potential sequels?
Not for me.
Do you want to see a sequel?
Yes.
Me too.
Yeah, I think there's definitely more to tell in this world. So.
Yeah. You know, I feel like, man, they've really got something going here with Batman that I'm excited about because they're already talking about sequels. They're already talking about spinoff series that are happening.
Yeah, the spinoff series are coming. Yeah, that's.
Yeah, I mean, you could get a whole Matt Reeves Batverse, if you will.
forget Zack Snyder. Sorry, Zack Snyder, but it's
moving on. I mean, as much as I loved the Snyderverse stuff. I prefer this to that, Absolutely. Definitely here for all of it. So
you know, I want this to be Batman. You know, I don't want mm-hmm. Justice League stuff in this. I don't want Superman. I want this to be Batman.
Yeah, and I want this to be the Batman going forward. Like these characters, these actors, this particular universe and feel. So I'm excited to see this movie again, and I'm excited to see where it goes from here. But what were your thoughts on the Batman? Let us know either on Twitter or if you're watching this on YouTube, if I even put this on YouTube, in the comment section. But
voicemail.
Yeah, voicemail.
Plug that right now, 724-901-1783, in case you don't stick around to the end of the show.
There you go. Let us know what you thought of the Batman.
Hey, Doc, we better back up. We don't have enough road to get up to 88. Roads?
Well, we're going. We don't need roads.
Thank you for tuning in to episode 119 of From a Certain Point of View. Remember to subscribe to the show if you haven't already. We're on pretty much all of those podcast apps out there, so find us on your favorite and subscribe. If you are on one like Apple Podcasts, let's leave a review. We would appreciate it if you did that because it helps us get out to more people. We are continuing our Discord watch parties this coming week on Thursday. Time is a little different on these because we're watching some movies now. We're going to be watching Batman Begins on Thursday at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time instead of 10. So 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time in our Discord server. If you would like to join and need the link for that, it's at facpov.com. It's also in your show notes. If you visit the website, though, you can also find some blog articles and some other ways to get in contact with us and send us questions. Some of those are on socials like Instagram and Twitter. Both of those are at Certain POV Pod. Facebook page is From a Certain Point of View. Our email address is certainpovpod@gmail.com. And like I mentioned before, you can leave us a voicemail and leave us your Batman review at 724-901-1783. And if you do that, we would love to play those on the show. So once again, that's 724-901-1783. We are also proud members of the Red 5 Network. You can find all of the 30-plus shows of the Red 5 Network on Red5Network.com and also on Twitter at Red5Network. You can find me on the internet at TheGoss85 on Twitter and Instagram, and also over at Ears Gone By, my Disney blog. Josh, where can they find you?
You can find me, as always, on Twitter at JediJarJar1722, and I am also doing something on YouTube called Live God's Truth. My next episode is going to feature one of my friends. We're going to talk about the importance of fathers, especially as it pertains to the lives of our children. I'm still trying to figure out how to find me, but for now it will be in the show notes, the link to my YouTube channel there, as I'm still working out that stuff, which, you know, is more Adam's strength than mine. But anyhow, that is all. Please remember also to subscribe to our YouTube channel, From a Certain Point of View. And today, everything we said was true.
From a Certain Point of View.